out east, and now retired since some joker had blown both his legs off. Last but not least, old One Eye, grizzled veteran of the short-lived but bloody Mutiny War of 68, which had flared in what had once been Kentucky. Ryan noted that none looked at all pleased to see him. One or two indeed looked positively murderous.
Hey, Charlie, you want to explain what's going on? Why there were guys spitting at us as we drove past to get here? And how come a One Eye there looks like he'd like to pluck out my eye and add it to his?
No one wants you here, Ryan. No one wants the traitor. You tell him to fuck off out of here. Get back to hell where he came from.
You say the friendliest things. Tell me more.
Charlie drew the cork on a liter bottle of red and pushed glasses across the bar. Ryan poured himself a glass and shoved the bottle toward JB. Ryan sipped some of the liquid, rolled it around his mouth, savored the nutty taste of it.
You got weapons, right?
Sure, some.
Spike 'em.
As bad as that?
The men blew two of the mines 3 days back.
Hey, what?
I said, the men...
Yeah, I heard you. Deliberate?
Charlie's tiny mouth closed, then opened. It was her way of smiling.
Sure, deliberate. They'd have blown the other two, but something went wrong. Fuses, timers, I don't know. So they barricaded themselves in down there.
I take it you're sure about this.
As I am that you're drinking my wine and not paying for it.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, big spender.
Catch me on payday. Back to the mines. How blown?
Roof rock falls. Teague's two main sources are now blocked to hell. The other two mines are smaller, easier to defend.
Defend? They have pieces?
They killed a whole squadron of Strasser's sec men. Tore them apart barehanded. As you're probably aware, Teague's police are well weaponed up. Handguns, auto rifles, MGs, and plenty of ammo.
Gas would clear them.
Wrong. Miners have blocked off the entrance to both mines and the old ventilation system.
So they just die of no air?
Uh-uh. They've been drilling their own air holes. It'd take Strasser's men days, weeks to find them. Months, maybe.
Food?
Sure.
Water?
Plenty. Pure, too. Can't be got at from outside.
I suddenly have the feeling that this one's been a long time in the planning.
Right.
What we have for that fat bastard won't make a piece of spit's worth a difference, Charlie. One, it wasn't a mighty load to begin with. Two, owing to circumstances not entirely beyond our control, the load is damn near halved anyway.
Makes no odds. You trading with Teague makes you the enemy. Places you on his side of the fence. Firmly, buddy. Story goes, you helped set the bastard up anyway.
Shit. That was 20 years ago. You know, JB, it just occurs to me there's another angle to all this. If Teague is desperate...
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing.
Sam, radio the old man. Tell him what's up. Find out if the main train's still checking in on the hour, and tell him to switch it to every 15 minutes.
Sam gulped her wine and made for the door. Rintoul, a stocky, chubby-faced kid, clasped at his belt as he glanced around the bar nervously.
Shit, I gotta watch your back all by myself in here?
Yeah. Relax, Wind.
Still, Ryan, Teague's no fool.
10 years ago he wasn't. 5 years ago he maybe wasn't. But only maybe. Now times have changed. He's sucked this place dry for too long, put nothing back in its place. Maybe the blood was rich 20 years ago, but it's thin as whey now. The assets are stripped. Cupboard's bare. There's nothing left. Teague don't know what's going down half the time. Strasser's king of the shit pile, and he's insane. All he cares about is watching kids killing kids, male and female. You get the message, Ryan?
Yeah, I get it. Stasis. Stagnation of empire. Assholes flogging a horse to death, but not realizing when it's dead. And continuing to beat it and beat it and beat it. I've seen it. But you're telling me the deadline's been reached? Moxon's ready to blow?
Not as easy as that, Ryan. A couple of months back, we had some kind of epidemic run through the Gaudies on the Strip. Real bad. Something internal rotted them out. Teague's medics couldn't cope. So they killed them. Killed them all, girls and boys. First off, they needled them. But that was too damn slow. So one night, they came and took them away in vans. Machine gunned them and burned the bodies out in the desert. So all the gaudy houses had empty rooms, and Strasser blitzed the place. Went through Shantytown dragging out just about anyone under the age of 20. Took them off. They had to have something to keep the miners quiet. but some of the men cut up more than usual. There was a riot, a lot of guys shot. The sect men contained it, put the clamp on, but maybe that was the final straw. Look around at this joint, Ryan. You can see how it is. Place is falling apart. Generators going bust and there's nothing to mend them with. Lack of parts, lack of interest. Everything in this town is too old, too damned worn out. Unrepairable. Or in any case, you force a guy to use his wrenches at the point of a gun, he ain't gonna do a prime job. He's gonna do just what's necessary to stop himself getting his head hold, and that's all. He's not gonna sweat for you, now is he? So things just get worse and worse.
But the miners, stockpiling food, drilling new vents that the overseers don't know about? Shit, Charlie. All that takes time. Not to mention a hell of a lot of effort, planning, thought.
Ah, who knows? I ain't privy to everything that goes down in this shithole, Ryan. All I know is that Moxon's on the edge. It's like there's a button somewhere, and there's a finger hovering over it. And once the finger jabs down, and once the button's pressed, blooey!
Charlie reached under the bar and pulled out a cigar. She warmed it over a candle before sucking flame into its end. Rentoul was still casting nervous glances at the hostile faces of the drinkers staring at him. Charlie's last comment was not helping him relax.
You'd think the place would be an armed camp if all this shit is going on. Patrols in the street, curfew, shoot to kill. Like that.
Yeah. We got a lot of crap at the entrance to town. And they were nervous, but they didn't seem to be pissing in their pants.
It's like I said. Teague's lost his grip and Strasser doesn't seem to care. I guess they just don't understand after 20 years of tight control. They're blind. It happens.
Yeah, it happens. And I guess it is time Moxon boiled over. You can't beat an entire town into subjugation forever.
Ryan took his wine and strode over to the table where sat Old One Eye and Chevy the Chase. That terrible man, crudely named after what was once a Washington suburb, according to some ancient map. Chevy was crouched deep in his mobile chair.
Look, count me out of this.
Hey, you know what? They're cracking down on muties now.
Don't use that word. How many times I gotta tell you? I don't call you a crappin' norm, do I?
How many norms you seen walking around on no legs, huh? You hideous apology for a human being.
Pity they didn't blow your vocals out when they blew your legs. The shit I have to put up with.
The nature of Old One Eye's particular mutation was more than merely dramatic. It was clear at once to any observer that at least one side of his bloodline had gotten savagely zapped three generations back by a rabid breed of radbug. Maybe both sides of his bloodline. That would certainly account for the top of his pate being flat and hairless and made up of flabby, spongy ridges of flesh, and his having only one eye, one glistening ocular orb, dead center of his forehead. From his nose downward, beyond the mouth and the stubbly beard shot with gray, he seemed perfectly normal, though a little on the squat side, and with arms maybe a fraction longer than the average, but only a fraction. It was not known exactly what part he'd played in the Muti War of 2068. He didn't talk about it much. Mutants escaping serfdom in the baronies of the East had fled west, and gravitated by degrees to the area around Old Louisville, and built up their own short-lived homeland over a period of 4 or 5 years. But there had been too much tension. The people around there, the normals, had grown discontented at what they saw as an invasion of their territory, their clean territory, by whole families of those whose indebtedness to the nuke, genetically speaking, was blazingly obvious. The normals wanted the muties out. The mutant families, having finally escaped from conditions in which they'd been treated worse than animals, refused to shift. They had built houses, farms, repair shops, set up trade lines. The move toward outright war had a blind and fearsome inevitability about it. A Norm farmer whose steam truck's boiler had burst near a Mutiville had forced a couple of mechs to fix a running repair, then casually shot them both when they'd asked for payment. If the farmer gained any gratification from this act of gratuitous violence, he didn't have it for long. He was followed to his own town and shot outside his home. What followed lasted maybe 10 months, during which time hundreds of mutants were massacred, whole vills burned and steam dozered. They gave as good as they got, but there were too few of them, too many normals, who in any case called to certain of the East Coast barons for arms and heavy hardware and reinforcements. The upshot was that in the late fall of 68, the Muties had moved out, headed farther into the central Deathlands, dispersed. Old One Eye had turned up in Moxon and settled there.
You know, the old bastard's insults are losing their kick. Time was he could be a mean-ass son of a bitch. Maybe I'm getting used to him. What do you say, Ryan?
Yeah, maybe.
Say one thing for this crap hole of a town. That fat hog of a Teague never used to give a shit if you had one head or two, one prick or three. Know what I mean? But now, hell. Them sect men of his are starting to beat up on the armless, earless, and noseless. They'll be putting them against the wall next, you mark my words. Hey, old One Eye, they say they aim for the heart, but with you, I reckon it'll be someplace else. The perfect target. Here's lead in your eye, pal.
Look.
Shut it, Chief. You're making our man nervous here. Don't mind him. Wind's in the wrong direction. His leg's been giving him shit for days.
Man, New Blasted right.
Old One Eye smiled gently, gazing up at Ryan. His eye was white-irised, pinkish around the edges.
Speaking as one eye to another, I'd say you better figure out fast which way you're gonna jump, boy. Oh, hell gonna break out soon. And that's a realer feeling than when young Chevier gets aches in his hocks. You gotta choose, boy. Choose damn soon.
Ryan stared down at the guttering flames reflected from the candles and the pools of spilled beer on the tabletop, aware that the buzz of conversation in the bar, muted and desultory as it had been, had suddenly ceased altogether. Even Rintoul had showed up, who was a mouthy kid at the best of times, though a good shot and loyal. Ryan could see old One Eye's face upside down, hideously distorted in the liquid. Could even see that single eye fixed on his. All at once, stories he'd often heard on his travels slid into his mind. Stories of mutants with the blazing eye. The eye that blasted you with a look. The eye that killed. Couldn't be true, of course. Foolish talk. Yet, why not? There were sensors, weren't there? Sensors who sniffed out danger, danger that was to come, danger that was just around the corner, short term, within the hour. And there were those who had an even rarer and more terrifying power, the Doomseers, precogs who had sharply defined visions of the future, what was to happen in the longer term. So why not the eye? Why not a look that could burn your mind out? He shook his head, looked up suddenly at the reality rather than the strange mirror image. Old One Eye's single eye shifted up too to follow him.
You're probably right.
That's my boy. One thing about you, Ryan, you're dependable. Known for it.
Ryan rubbed at his face, at the stubble growing on his chin. Weirdly, he felt that he just made an important decision, a vital decision, although he was not aware that his conscious mind had done so, and the reply he'd just given had been little more than noncommittal.
You old bastard. I think you've been trying to hypnotize me.
I don't have the devil's eye, son. Just one good optic that's seen me through a mess of years. But it's as straight as yours.
Yeah, well, good luck.
Ryan turned on his heel and made for the bar again. He glanced to his right as the door to the place banged open, but it was not Samantha the Panther. He saw a man whose clothes seemed too big for him, as though he'd shrunk in a shower of rad rain, been not quite eaten up by the acids. His face was gaunt, hollow-eyed. His skin was burned nearly black and looked to be so thin that you could poke your pinky through. He shoved the door closed again, his whole body trembling. Charlie, behind the bar, glared at him and began rubbing a cloth vigorously over the bar.
Kurt! What the hell are you doing out?
I had to get out, Charlie. Up in the roof, I was going goddamn crazy. The walls were closing in on me. Had to get out. I had to.
You get back upstairs again, you stupid blasted! I don't know why the hell I bother.
I met him, Charlie, across the street. Bastard recognized me. Charlie, what am I gonna do?
This is all I need. Beat it. Get back upstairs. Don't make a sound. Move!
The man pushed past them, ran stumblingly along the side of the bar and into the thicker shadows at the end of the room.
Let's get out of here. We got the picture.
Yeah, okay. Give me a minute. Charlie, what was all that about?
That guy? My lodger. I'm looking after the guy.
Ryan knew it would be demeaning to Charlie, whom he liked, but he suddenly had an urge to burst out laughing. He fought to keep the urge down.
Actually, he's in deep shit. I'm gonna have to sneak him out of town sometime. Got in bad with one of Strasser's gorillas and disappeared. About 5-6 months back. Then he reappeared about a month ago, looking like he'd been whipped up in a twister, spread all over the landscape, and then stuck back together again the wrong way. Seems he'd walked back to Moxon from the Darks.
The Darks?
Yeah. You remember a head case called McCandless?
Sure.
Ryan, I thought we were leaving.
Okay, wait.
McCandless took off to the Darks with a party of guys, including Kurt, who'd signed up on the spur to get out from under the gorilla. The old story. They were looking for the treasure. Har, har. Only Kurt got back, and he'd stopped one in the shoulder. Had fever, delirium, you name it. Difficult to figure out what was real, what was not near. Kept on yelling about a fog with claws, fog with feet.
Fog?
That's what he said.
Ryan!
Wait, blast it.
Too late.
The door crashed open once more. Black, leather-jacketed men boiled into the room. 7 of them, including the leader, a beefy guy with a walleye. Ryan recognized his face about the same time the man recognized him. Guy called Hajik, one of Court Strasser's upper echelon sec men. A mean bastard, he recalled, although one with no great brain. Ryan hoped there wasn't going to be any trouble, because he was now convinced that beating a hasty retreat out of Moxon was the only sensible course of action to take, and the quicker the better. Hajik's men were all armed with auto rifles, M16s mostly, which looked to be in reasonable repair. They were shifting themselves into and around the door end of the room, rifles ready, blank-faced. Most of them were young, early 20s, raised against a background of violence so that they had become violent themselves, insensible to all but the lowest emotions, icy-hearted. Violence was the only way of life they knew. Hajik stalked down the room, ignoring Ryan completely, even though Ryan knew he'd been recognized as soon as the man had entered the bar. Hajik had an H&K 556mm. He was holding it downward by its pistol grip. Ryan thought he was either very sure of himself or very foolish. More likely the latter. JB, next to Ryan, had shifted into his yawning mode, a sure sign that he was all too aware that danger loomed. JB leaned back against the bar top, yawning a second time, patted his mouth, sniffed as though to clear his nose. JB was gearing himself to kill. Charlie picked up a jug in one hand and began filling it from the nearest barrel.
Where is he?
Where's who?
Don't fuck around, muty bitch. Where is he?
Where's who? You're looking for someone. We're all here. You can see that for yourself.
Listen, muty bitch. A guy dived in here moments ago. I want him bad. I don't get him. I'll fire this place and you in it. All of you.
Why didn't you say so in the first place? The Liz, he just came in. Didn't you, Liz?
A tall, thin muty with a long nose and bluish, squeamish skin stood up at his table. He looked puzzled.
Sure, Miss Charlie. What's your problem, Captain?
Hajik looked murderous. He began to swing the H&K up, and Ryan thought this whole business had gone on long enough.
You mean the wimpy little fucker who galloped through here just now?
Hajik paused before turning to face him. Ryan could almost hear the pinwheels of his tiny brain creaking slowly into action. Hajik knew something. More to the point, he knew something was up, was going on. Possibly right now, at this very moment. But Hajik was a stoop of the first water. A smile darted across his sallow features. It was probably meant to be friendly, but it simply made him look sly. His squint didn't help.
Ryan, good to see you. You say you see a guy?
Guy come in here like there were rad rats chewing his ass? Sure. Shifty little bastard he looked to me. Come on, show you where he went.
As he said this, he turned away from Hajik, began striding down the room, aware of Charlie's pop-eyed gaze on his right, but also aware, just, of a flicker of dark amusement across the ugly features of old One Eye down the room. Out of the corner of his eye, he could see the mirrors, could see Hajik following, 3 men in tow. And as he was speaking, his back to Hajik, his open coat cloaking his movements, his left hand was smoothly cross-drawing the Sig Sauer, his right feeling his belt, fingers unpopping a pouch, drawing from it a stubby little suppressor, screwing it into the Sig's barrel.
Door here. Yeah, curtain.
This was a pisser. He had to draw the curtain back, or even a dimwit like Hajik would smell a rat. As he slid the heavy material to one side, he heard Old One Eye berating Chevy the Chase in a loud voice. Good. Even some noise was useful, attention-grabbing just when it was needed. He wondered what the hell was beyond the door. He wondered how he would play what now had to be played. Sometimes a response had to be purely automatic. He had to work blind, and the nature of the killing ground was in the lap of the gods. The suppressor was tight. He carefully pushed the gun inside his pants, but with plenty of grip available for instant draw. A door faced him. It opened inward, toward him. That was a bonus. He pulled it open and smiled. He was in a small lobby. To one side, carpeted wooden stairs rose to a narrow landing before doubling back. He could see the upper portion of the staircase through its banister posts. A lamp hung low on a chain from the lobby's ceiling. Hajik's three Sekhmen pushed past him and began to mount the first flight of stairs.
Stay here.
Bad character, huh?
Hajik moved closer, inclined his head toward Ryan's. His chin was stuck out, and there was a ratty grin on his face. In the light from the lamp, it looked like a devil's mask, and Ryan thought the sooner it was destroyed, the better for all. His right hand shot up hard, the heel of it smashing up into the underside of Hajik's jaw. Hajik's head rocked back, a gargled grunt bursting out of his mouth in a fine spray of blood, and Ryan's left hand, fist balled, rocked into his stomach with the force of a pile driver. Hajik jackknifed, dry heaving, and Ryan reached past him and pulled the door shut, his left hand yanking up the Sig Sauer. He spun around and the Sig spat three times. The first round hit the last man on the stairs in the back. The second round hit the next in line, a headshot that spray-painted the wall beyond. The guy spun into the third man, throwing him sideways, his gun thumping down onto the carpet.
God damn it! Shit!
Ryan's slug smashed into the wall above his head, gnawing plaster. For a second, there was stillness. Ryan gazing up at the third man, who gaped down at him in shock through the banister. The guy clambered to his feet, not yelling, too stunned even to scream, but dragging at his M16 as a reflex action. Ryan smacked his right hand into the Sig's butt, switched fingers, hit him with two shots in the chest. Even as this happened, Ryan was leaping up the first flight, booting down on the prone body of the first man and clutching at the corner pole of the banister, yanking himself up and around and grabbing the third man as he tottered forward on the rebound from the wall. He was just in time. Another couple of seconds and the guy would have slammed into the supports and either up and overed, crashing down to the lobby below with a hell of a racket, or plowed straight through the posts, making even more of a row. Ryan pushed him onto the stairs, a slumped heap, then stood up and peered down at Hajik on the floor below. He could see the wall-eyed man glaring upward, clutching his gut, still unable to speak or yell or scream, only wheeze and vomit. Ryan leaned over the banister and shot him. Ryan cocked an ear for any untoward sounds from below, but could hear nothing through the closed door. He moved lightly downstairs, on the balls of his feet, still on adrenaline burn, the screen of his memory playing over the scene back in the bar. Unless they'd all moved around some, there was a guy standing in front of the entrance door at the far end of the room, and he had to be nailed first and foremost. And the longer he waited in this lobby, the more twitchy those guys would get. By now they'd be thinking they ought to be hearing bangs and yells and shots. He bent and peered at the door, but the keyhole was blocked on the other side. His lips came back in a feral snarl. He was still high on adrenaline. He held the gun in his left hand and threw himself at the door. He hit the wood, the door slammed open, he brought his right hand around to the Sig's grip, slapping it tight, his eye taking in the scene, even as he squeezed off. No one had moved. The man he'd remembered as standing beside the entrance door was still there, his M16 held in both hands, aimed to his left, at the room in general. Ryan's shot changed all that. It hit the man in the chest and punched him backward, so that he collapsed against the wall, slumping and leaving a thick red smear as he sank to the floor. Ryan watched in admiration as JB, still leaning with his back to the bar, his coat open, his right hand resting on his belt, drew the Browning with shocking speed. His arm jerked up and the high power barked, its bullets slamming one of the other black jackets over into a table. The table splintered under his weight and the violent impact of his flailing body. That was what saved the last man, who was close to the table and to his heart-shot companion. He jumped away from the collapsing table and stumbled, dropped his piece, then with a wild yell, leapt for the door. Ryan hammered around at him, but missed by an inch. In adrenaline-boosted terror, the guy yanked the door and dove through it, door swinging shut behind him. JB and Ryan both ran toward the door.
No bangs in the street!
JB stopped dead, as though mesmerized by a vision only he could see. Ryan, running through the room full pelt, slowed to a halt, Sig raised. The door suddenly creaked back open. The guy who had run staggered in the doorway, his arms half raised, his hands clawing feebly at nothing. Then he fell backward and crashed to the carpeted floor. Another figure appeared in the doorway. It was Sam, holding a silenced Walther PP Super in her right hand. She stepped over the body, bent, and heaved it away from the door. She slammed the door, kept hold of the Walther.
Main train's gone off the air. We were rapping with Cone in War Wag 1 when he suddenly reported the convoy was surrounded. A voice came on the net, demanded to talk to the old man. Then there was a lot of interference. We relocated, heard this other guy said they'd nerve the main train. They were all dead, finished, kaput. And unless the old man threw in, the convoy'd get blitzed too. Then there was more interference and they cut out.
Deadline?
Dead as this goon here. We tried everything. They're off the air.
Think it's Teague?
Pretty damn sure of it. Sounds like maybe he used nerve gas. But where'd he find it? Then again, we found it before. Maybe he's doing some searching himself. Or buying from someone else who has.
Could be a bluff. Might have just axed the radio link somehow.
How could they do that? They could throw an interference fuzz, but not kill it completely unless they were there. And that means everyone in the main train could be dead.
Traitor?
Doubt it. Do us a favor, Charlie. Get these stiffs out of the way.
Just like that? I'll wave my wand, Ryan.
I'm not in the mood, Charlie.
Okay, we'll fix it. I take it there's more on the stairs.
You take it correct.
You're a real hothead, Ryan. What if they came in a vehicle?
He said he saw them in the street, across the street.
Oh, right. Good memory. Can I get you deadbeats to give me a hand here?
Ryan watched as half the bar patrons began dragging bodies toward the far end of the room.
Listen, they used gas on the train. Why didn't they use it on the old man?
That's a rhetorical question, JB. You know the answer.
They mortared gas canisters in. Something we didn't make allowances for. Gas gets in through cracks and tiny holes, so all our people are dead. Nothing we can do there. Say it's a short-term agent. After dispersal, they now have to open up all those land wags and trucks and the two war wags. But they can't because they know that every damn vehicle owned by us is packed with booby traps. Everybody knows that. And if they start smashing out window glass or blowing in doors, the whole caboodle could go up and they lose everything. So they're stuck. They are well and truly stuck.
So they have to parley with the old man.
So they have to take him alive.
Non-toxic agent.
Nothing else to do.
Yeah. So that means the old man's out. But he'd have made sure all the vehicles were tight. So that means Teague's goons have got more vehicles on their hands they can't touch, move, or do anything at all with.
Yeah.
And that means we're the only free agents in town.
Yeah.
But they don't know what we know. No one knows that.
That little extra. How long we got?
Rough timing, I'd say about 4 hours.
Gotta work fast. What's your plan, War Chief?
The room was now clear of stiffs. Incredibly, those who remained in the bar were drinking and talking as though nothing had happened at all in the past 10 minutes or so. Ryan caught old One Eye single orb, pink-rimmed, the eyelid fluttering in a macabre and sardonic wink. He stared at Sam, Rintoul, finally at JB. He thought of those on the main train, maybe a couple of hundred souls all told. All loyal comrades, some indeed close friends, who'd shared with him 1,000 experiences, 1,000 dangers, 1,000 joys and carousals. He thought of the flame-haired girl, Christy, with the deep, luminous green eyes. Extinguished, snuffed out. Rage was like a sudden eruption of fierce white flame that licked through his entire system.
We take the war to the enemy. We pay a visit to Jordan Teague.
Despite orders, the sec man kept to the shadows. The deep shadows. The deeper, the better. He kept to the shadows despite orders, despite doomy warnings from his unit leaders, despite hideously snarled threats of disembowelment or being flayed alive or having his hands nailed to the wall. Despite all these and more, he kept to the shadows because he was beginning to get cautious. He felt safer in the shadows, out of reach. Safe enough to hold quiet, whispered conversations with himself, to pass the long night.
Shit. This job used to be fun. Used to be a fucking laugh riot.